supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Calling all denizens of Earth. Tune in to KABU on Saturday, April 22nd from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. for KABU's Earth Day Takeover. It's a whole day of radio programming devoted to climate action and environmental justice. Join us and prepare for nature sounds, music, and activist interviews focused on our shared climate future. That's KABU's Earth Day Takeover on Saturday, April 22nd from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. and online at kabu.fm/earthday.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. This is not the Quiet Storm. I'm just trying to get my voice back. You are tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Stick around. We have an excellent show lined up for you today. We're going to talk about local elections and why they are important and what can go wrong if you choose not to participate or if you choose to ignore it. And you know, the best part about today's episode is we have an incredible gentleman with us today, a very special guest and a dear friend of mine and a friend of the show, Mr. Jevin Hodge, who most recently was the Democratic nominee in Arizona's 1st District. That's Scottsdale, for those that know. And his race of all the 435 seats was the 6th closest, decided 10 days after the election and decided by less than 1% of the vote. And I'm confident that list goes on. So please say hello to our listeners and let them know a little bit more about you.
Well, the first thing I have to say is thank you for having me. Thanks for being here. And thanks to all the folks, you know, tuning in. And this is about to be a great show. I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you for the introduction. And the reason, one of the things I'm most excited for, because I've been involved in politics and government for a while here. And when I was elected at 22 years old to lead the Democratic Party in the state of Arizona, I was the youngest statewide Black official in the country. And one of my jobs is making sure we get folks elected and we have conversations around civic engagement. And I've run for local office. I've run for the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors in one of the closest races in Arizona history. And then most recently for the United States Congress. So I'm excited to talk about the importance of being involved and being engaged, but more importantly, the power of your voice.
Right. Well, I can't wait to get to all of that. And so much more. Like I said, great show lined up for you today. But first and foremost, like we always do at this time, it is time for some Ebony Excellence. Q.
Shall we?
We shall. So today's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and I will be sharing from BINnews.com. Shout out to the Black Information Network one time, if you don't mind. A Georgia high school student has earned over $1 million in scholarships from dozens of schools across the country. Quote, I'm so blessed to have this opportunity, 17-year-old Regis Harris said, per Atlanta News First. He goes on to say, there were several schools at the top of my list. Harris, a senior at Chapel Hill High in Douglasville, was accepted to over 40 colleges that are offering a total of $1.6 million in scholarships. Some of the schools include the University of Georgia and USC. He says it was a lot of sacrifices. There were a lot of nights I stayed up studying all night long. The straight A student is a member of the band, chess club, varsity track team, and National Honor Society. He also works part time and sings in the church choir. Harris said he sees community service just as important as his academics. He goes on to say, the hardest part for me was that I balanced staying on top of work, but also that I maintained being a well-rounded person. He was born with a heart condition, and his parents say their son has been a fighter all of his life. Quote, the doctors told me he would be developmentally delayed, his mother, Kia Harris, said. Quote, they even stated that he might have to have heart surgery again. Wow. He is our miracle. But Harris has been able to defy the odds and looks forward to the next chapter in his life. Quote, I'm looking forward to being able to adapt, to expand my mind, my learning, and I can't wait. He said, Harris plans to attend North Carolina A&T, where he'll study biology and hopes of becoming a psychiatrist. So shout out to Regis Harris. You are indeed Ebony Excellence. Now, vote local. Okay, we've talked about this on the show before. But today, we have an expert in the building, a political commentator in Jevin Hodge, and someone who can help educate us and you at the same time in terms of why these things are so important. So what we'll do is we'll talk about some of the things that have happened recently. And what I'd like to do is get your reaction and just kind of the whys.
Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. So the one thing that's been making, I guess, the most news in this space in the past week, couple of weeks, I should say, is Tennessee. So the Tennessee House expelled two Democratic Black lawmakers after falling short of ousting another. That word always ties me up. So Tennessee's Republican-controlled House of Representatives voted to expel Representatives Justin Jones and Justin Pearson a week after they led a gun reform protest on the House floor. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, the story has a happy ending. But I think that this example, and we'll get to the others, shows exactly how much power there is in local governments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about maybe what happened here and how folks participating in the election process could help shape these outcomes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to start by highlighting a theme that we're going to keep coming back to today on the show. Mm-hmm. And is that your vote matters and your voice matters. Mm-hmm. And what folks often forget is how powerful their vote and their voice really truly are. And it's our jobs to remind them and remind them the power of their participation in their democracy, the power of participating in government, the power of utilizing their vote at the ballot box and utilizing their voice, whether it's that vote at the ballot box or in a demonstration or whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. But this situation here is truly unique because there were three lawmakers that were voted to be expelled. Two Black males and another that was not a Black individual. But the only two lawmakers that had the votes to be expelled were the two Black individuals. Mm-hmm. So there's a racial component that competes with that is involved in this. Mm-hmm. But the reason why they were up for the expulsion was because they were utilizing their voice. And protected under the First Amendment right is your freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. They weren't doing anything unlawful. They weren't doing anything to infringe upon the freedoms or the safety of anyone else, but simply protesting a significant issue that we have here in this country around gun violence and the future of gun rights and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so these individuals were, and what they were doing is that they were protesting, they were utilizing their voice in the space in which they could garner the attention, mm-hmm. right? On the floor yeah. of the House of Representatives.
Where it's going to matter.
Exactly. And so let's go back now to the most important thing, how your vote and your voice matters.
Okay.
When you don't participate in an election, people get elected that may not do the best thing by the individual, right? And you know, it's not one side or another that basically decides an election. It really comes down to the folks that are apathetic. It's the apathy that decides an election. I mean, we are the most advanced nation in the world, where in a great election, right, we see 65-70% participation. Mm. I mean, and that's just outstanding.
Yeah, that'd be an astronomical turnout. That's
exactly right. So you're telling me that at the end of the day, if only 70% of the people participate, right, that's great. I you know, don't get me wrong, I understand a C is still a passing grade, But when you live in a country that the First Amendment right is the value of your voice, the value of the freedom of your speech, and you're not utilizing that, that means that our system is flipped on its head at its core. And so in situations like this, happens because you have people in communities that aren't utilizing their votes, and you have individuals that are getting elected because of apathy. You get individuals that are getting elected in districts, right? Whether it's at the state level in this case, or at city levels, and the municipal level, because of the lack of participation. And a lot of the times, right? A lot of the times, and this is the one that blows my mind, these elections are decided by small amounts of votes.
I was actually going to suggest that. I remember seeing something on Netflix recently, and this kind of put the thought in my head. What was suggested in this documentary, I forget the name of it, but what was suggested was that because of how our political system is set up, a vote from an individual in California is worth approximately half in terms of its value to the overall election process than a vote from a white landowner male who lives in Wisconsin. And that got me to thinking, if I don't vote, if I don't engage, which historically my understanding is that those of us of a more liberal persuasion tend to vote less, and those with more conservative values are very much engaged at every level of the political process. So if I, being a liberal-minded individual, don't vote, that ensures that the vote of those who perhaps want to see the country revert back to an earlier time, state, whatever, it actually increases the weight of their vote if I don't engage in the political process. Is that...
That is a very, very good way of looking at this, right? And I want to start by saying this, like, I have my views, I have my ideological standing and what I believe in. I'm a proud Democrat, I don't run from it. But as someone who has vied for elected office, my job is not to be an ambassador of a certain interest or a certain ideological stance, but to be a representative of 100% of the population. And that's what's missing, right? Because of exactly what you just highlighted. If we have one-for-one participation, then that means that, you know, the elected official is forced to listen to both people. But for every one vote, you got two on the other side, and that could be Democrat or Republican. But in this case, right, it's, you know, for every one liberal that doesn't vote, right, another, you know, conservative does vote, right? That's one for two, which means that the elected official that then is elected only has to cater to one ideological...
To the voters, not the population.
The voters that are participating, right? And, you know, I just want to make sure we're clear about that, right? Because everybody, you know, as long as you're registered, you're a voter, right? But if you're not participating...
Well, yeah, they got to pay attention to the people who are engaged not the population.
That's exactly right. And that's the reason why our system is flawed, right? Our system is flawed because you have individuals that are working every single day to destroy what we all collectively have worked so hard to protect and to preserve, right? And as long as voting is difficult, there's no reason why we don't have automatic voter registration nationwide. There's no reason why, you know, we're not automatically registering 18-year-olds in their civics class or history class while they're in high school, right? But that's by design, right? Because as long as certain folks are making it harder for people to vote, that means that they're going to be able to maintain an office. That means that they're going to be able to continue to do nonsense things like what happened in Tennessee, right? And again, let's go back to the beginning. Your vote matters. And your voice matters. You may not always get what you strive for, but your vote matters and your voice matters.
I appreciate
that. Before we move on, how do we get people to believe what you just said? Right? Because the disenfranchisement of the voter sets the table for the outcome that you guys just talked about, where I only have to cater my messaging to the people who are going to actually turn out. I know these people aren't going to turn out because I and my colleagues have shown them that their voice does not matter.
Yep.
Yeah. Even those that come out and vote, I've shown them now for multiple election cycles, your voice really doesn't matter. So as that number starts to dwindle and people get less and less motivated to even show up, then of course, why would I have any messaging or any policy promises to these people who I know, based on my behavior and those like me, have gotten to a point where they are apathetic, where they do not feel like their voice matters, and we keep proving it to them.
My brother, that right there is what keeps me up at night, right? Like, you just gave me chills asking that question, because we have to change the class of people who are running for office. Because you have the disenfranchised folks, and there are so many different categories of disenfranchised folks who live below the socioeconomic belt, right? Folks like us, black from the black community, right? You got folks in the LGBT community. When you feel forgotten and left behind by your government because of the elected officials, you have no desire to participate and no willingness to participate. So we have to flip that on its head. And I'll just give you a very practical example. I've run for office twice. I've run for office and I've had over 1 million people cast their votes in elections for me. And both of my elections, when you combine the vote totals together, is less than 3,500 votes. And the reason being is because I personally believe we expanded the electorate. I ran for the county supervisors, which is like a county commissioner in Maricopa County, for a district that had over 1 million people. The vote was decided 15 days after the election by 403 votes. And I ran in a district where, as a Democrat, where Trump carried the district by 8 points the election before. This was not a Democratic district. And then I just ran for the United States Congress in a district where you had a 12-year Republican incumbent. And my race was decided by 0.7% or 3,000 votes 8 days or 10 days after the election. The reason why I highlight that is because when you can flip the status quo on its head, the results will always be in your favor. And what it we do differently, and I always say we, is that we weren't campaigning. Never once did I campaign for office. It was about building a movement to strengthen our democracy. And when you can inspire people to believe that never believed that their government or their democracy was for them, that changes the complete composition of the system. And what's going to have to happen in order to change the makeup of the, you know, I mean, look, let me tell you one of my favorite quotes. If you want to change the laws, you got to change the lawmakers. And the only way to change the lawmakers is to make sure that you have people who are reflective of the community participating in their election. You got to change the voters.
I want to jump in right here because I think that this is exactly what we're seeing for those folks who might be disengaged from the political process, if I had to guess. The best way to see what it could look like if everybody, not just you, I know as individuals, everybody's focused on money. I'm not mad at you. We all are focused on money, but this is a long road that we have to walk, and money's at the end of it. We got a lot of stuff to get through before we get there. And this is my belief. So if we want to have an idea of how it could look, we can just look at the way conservatives move. And in particular, we're talking about, you know, Tennessee. Those representatives were elected. All those Republican representatives were elected. And as soon as they had an opportunity, as soon as they had the smallest little bit of dirt, you know what the funniest thing is, that we, you know, we're all black men in here. We always say how we have to be twice as good to be
go half as far.
Yeah, exactly. Twice as good to go half as far. So this is a perfect example of that. You know, they didn't mess up, but, you know, as soon as the conservative majority there found an angle, they didn't censor them.
They didn't censor them. They did the job that they were elected to do.
Exactly.
These people probably campaigned on these principles.
Exactly.
And I want to just highlight to exactly what you just said. I want to bring this back to your point, Q. When you can make people feel something and you can inspire them to believe in something greater than them, that's how we strengthen the system. That's how we, you know, it's not just asking people to vote, right? It's asking the question of how can I be a part of your life? How can we make your life better? And it's not just going to go talk to them in October before the November election. Right. It's talking to them in December before the election in 2 years, right? It's making sure that we have this continuous conversation. And I just want to give you an example that's very fresh in all of our minds, right? And one that we probably won't forget. And I know you got, I know y'all got a lot of listeners out there that's much younger than us. So they may not remember what the country felt like in 08, but President Obama inspired you to believe, hope, change, right? Inspired you to believe in something that never, you know, we could never imagine existing. If y'all remember how it felt in 08 and 2010, where people were inspired to participate. Well, the same phenomenon happened in 2016. It just wasn't to us. right? Mm. President Trump inspired a group of people who felt forgotten and left behind by the previous administration. And that's how he got elected, right? He got inspired a group of people who felt forgotten and left behind. So two very good examples on different sides of the ideological spectrum, but what they did is the same exact thing, right? Well, one campaign was filled with lies and bigotry and xenophobia, and we're not going to go there.
Make sure you
know we're not going to go there. Racism and you know, and all those things. But they essentially attempted to inspire a group of people who felt forgotten and left behind by their government, right? And when we can do that at the local level, right, that's how we build a more transparent, a more efficient government. You know, my mother, for example, is a city councilwoman in the city of Tempe, first Black woman elected in the city of Tempe. I mean, this woman is living history. But what she has done, you know, she's out there. You know, when community members are angry at a decision that she made, she doesn't run in the back room. She goes and puts up a chair. And like, if they want to yell and if they want to argue, you know, and it's never arguing, let me be clear. If they want to voice their frustration, she is there for them to touch and allow them to voice their frustration, because that's what your elected officials are supposed to do. Mm. Not run away in those tough moments or cater to the people that are kissing your tail.
Mm. Now, I also want to talk about some other examples in local government. So, Q, why don't you take us to North Dakota?
Ramses deals with these issues a lot better than I do because flagrant hypocrisy, flagrant bigotry, flagrant racism, they hit me a little different. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of our colleagues and constituents have determined that flagrant and direct racism, bigotry, and hypocrisy is kind of intellectually beneath them to emote about. Mm. It drives me insane.
Mm-hmm. Because you care about people, brother.
The Bismarck Tribune is where this story comes from. 10 days after narrowly defeating a bill to provide free school lunches to low-income K through 12 students. This is even, I laugh because of how frustrating this is to read. The North Dakota Senate approved legislation to increase the amount of money lawmakers and other state employees receive in meal reimbursements. I'm going to read that again because it's really that unbelievable. 10 days after defeating a bill to provide school lunches, free school lunches to children, that same body went on to approve legislation to increase the amount of money they get, them and their colleagues, for meal reimbursement. Let's take money from our children while approving legislation, to give ourselves more money for the same thing.
It's a wild world we live in, but I think that
these are duly elected officials, by the way.
But again, this is an incredible example of exactly how far your vote in local elections can go. The temperament, the values of these people, you know, for those even Republicans, there's a quote from the Bible. I think it came from Jesus. And it's like, the poor you will have with you always, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right.
That bill approved by Republican lawmakers, as if I needed to say that.
So, you know, I think there's a term, RINO, Republican in name only. You know what I mean? But folks with those biblical values that party tends to espouse would not be voting in this way, right? What is the purpose of the government if not to care for children who are hungry?
You are talking about people who use the Lord Jesus Christ for marketing.
Well,
these are not beliefs.
John McCain,
this is a PR campaign.
Well, you know, that's a whole nother topic for a segment down the road. But, you know, it's folks like John McCain, rest in peace, right? Folks like, you know, Barry Goldwater, rest in peace. These are traditional, principled conservatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I got the opportunity before the senator passed away to work with the senator on a few different things. Mm-hmm. And we didn't always agree. And there are a number of different Republicans that I still work with to this day that we don't always agree on, but you know, their heart is in the right place.
Sure.
And with initiatives like this, right, you are led to ask the question of, why the hell are you doing this? Mm. Right? Because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. What's the purpose of a government if not to take care of kids, children that are poor?
And you know, they're going to give you some fiscal argument. They're going to give you this discussion about this or that. But it's the second action is the one that we must be most concerned about.
What's that?
Right. And it's the fact that they just a week later, they voted for meal reimbursements for themselves.
And so their hypocrisy is on full display.
So it's, you know, the philosophical standing here is that, you know, we don't want to pay for everybody to have everything, but it's OK for us to have it. Mm. And that's the issue. Because, look, if it's in, if it's an intellectual discussion, right, rooted and based in substance, I'm happy to have it. Right. Like, OK, so if the budget doesn't support paying for, you know, free, not saying that that's my personal opinion, but if the budget doesn't support it and you can logically articulate why and where, you know, there's going to be shortcomings, let's have the discussion. But you can't say that, you know, I can't give money to these folks because I don't want to, but I can give money to us because I want to. Right. Like that's not, you know, but let's go back to the number one thing.
And 9 year olds can't get a job.
That, oh. There you go.
So before we wrap this part of the show up, I do want to mention another instance, this one in North Carolina. So this comes from CBS News. A Democrat in a North Carolina state house switched to the Republican Party Wednesday, giving the GOP veto-proof control in both chambers of the legislature. It's a setback for Democratic Governor Roy Cooper as he tries to block hardline conservative policies in his final 2 years in office. Basically, what this means is that they can override the governor's vetoes. Mm-hmm. So what you're seeing now is people who vote in the election process every 4 years, I believe that's when you have a chance to pick your governors, but people not voting in, you know, the local elections, which tend to also be overrepresented by conservatives. So you have a state like North Carolina where the conservatives run the House and the state House and the state Senate, but you have a
Democratic
governor. Mm-hmm. And now he can't do anything because of a lack of engagement. So
I wonder why someone would make such a switch.
Who knows?
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
For those of you just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I am your host, Ramses Jha.
He is Ramses Jha. This, again, is not the Quiet Storm. This is Q Ward. I'm just trying to get my voice back.
It's all right.
And you guys are tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Indeed. Special guest with us today, Jevin Hodge, who is helping us navigate the complexities of local elections, local governments.
Oh, we're having a good
stories.
Time.
We're having
some
a
stories,
good time,
yeah, I'll tell you.
So stay tuned. We got a lot more show for you. We're going to talk about some of the good things that happen when people do engage in local elections, right? So what we've talked about so far are tendencies, but we have some examples in recent history, recent weeks, indeed, of folks like really knocking it out of the park. And so I'm happy to get into those stories next. And hopefully we can continue to galvanize the support we need to make the world into what we want. But first and foremost, let's talk about becoming a better ally, BABA Baba. Today's Baba is sponsored by Major Threads for the finest in men's sportswear. Check majorthreads.com. And for today's allies, an example of becoming a better ally, we want to shout out a couple of municipal governmental bodies, okay? Earlier in the show, we mentioned Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, the two Tennessee House representatives that were expelled. And I told you the story had a happy ending. Well, the two were both reinstated. The Memphis Commission voted unanimously to reinstate Justin Pearson this past Wednesday after he was expelled from the Tennessee State Legislature, and the Metropolitan Nashville Council unanimously voted to reinstate Justin Jones. And so, despite the conservative majority expelling these two gentlemen from the Tennessee House of Representatives for protesting that body's inability to tackle the issue of gun violence and the proliferation of gun violence in the state, and with the recent mass shooting at the school, I forget the name of the school, but the religious school that was there. Now these other bodies have come in and reinstated them, and that, I believe, is true allyship, especially with the unanimous vote. All these guys did was create new enemies and they didn't need them. And all they did was galvanize a community to try to fight for what's right for our children, for ourselves, for our posterity, which is our responsibility in this country. So to those two bodies, we salute you. Thank you for being allies. Now, let's talk about some positive stuff, some good things that happen when we vote local.
Before we move on, because we have someone who I consider an expert in the space with us today, I just want to pose a question before we change the temperature in the room.
Go ahead.
Former athlete myself, the most difficult losses I faced from Little League all the way through college were that barely losses. When we lost by a field goal, or we lost by a last second three-pointer, or you know, we're up in the bottom and that team hits a home run, they clear the bases and they win. Emotionally, those have always been the hardest to rebound from. With an apathetic tenor really being more present now than I can remember in my lifetime. I'm sure there were times in history before where that might have been the space that we lived in, but coming off of electing Barack Obama and then going into the election after he was done and really not feeling like we had a candidate that we loved. And I'm sure a lot of people felt that way in our most recent election. In cases like yours, where you do galvanize a community and you do wake up people who might not have been participating, to get that close and not cross the finish line, how do you reawaken and remotivate and reengage with people who really did believe in what you were doing and what they thought you'd be able to do for your constituency if you were elected? When you get that close, it's not just deflating for you. It's very deflating for those who support you and for those who, you know, really some, I'm sure, wanted you to do it again. Starting back from zero, starting back from go, how do you get that community to reengage and to wake back up and to remind them that everything you sought out to do is still there to be done?
I appreciate the question. I'll tell you, it is very difficult, as you highlighted. But number one, the work never stops. It never stops. And so, and that's win, lose, or draw. And I believe that this is my calling. My calling is to serve, whether that's in elected office or not. My calling is to serve. So for me, it's being strong, not only for myself, but for the community, and continuing to remind folks that this is a part of the process. You don't always get, you know, you don't always get what you want when you want it, how you want it. But I will say this is highlighting the victories when they come, right? Because like you said, you know, even though you may lose the game by three, one of the players might have had one of the highest scoring games of their entire career. And because of that, they may go off to the next level. Right. And that's what we are experiencing right now. We didn't win this battle, but we accomplished so much. We got new people involved. We got new people engaged. We got new people invited into the democratic process that otherwise would have never been invited or engaged. I got folks that volunteered and worked on the campaign that literally came in off the streets and was like, I saw or heard about you or read about you in the paper and I just wanted to meet you. And then now they're working in politics to engage and get people involved, you know? And so like, we got to highlight those victories. But there's a quote that I live by from one of my favorite shows, West Wing. I love West Wing. And the President Bartlett on one of the episodes said that every time that you think that you've measured your capacity to meet a challenge, you will look up and you will be reminded that the capacity may well be limited. And in this moment, you know, I thought I met that capacity for this challenge, but you know, life still goes on and the world will continue to turn. And now we push ourselves to greater limits because we're 10 times more resilient than we were when we started this process.
Love it.
Amen.
Okay. All right. So let's get this party started. I'm going to do a little reading from BET.com. A California lawmaker envisions a statewide system to notify people that a black child or a young woman is missing. Interesting, you might say, but allow me to read on. In hopes of reducing the disproportionate number of them who disappear every year. If his proposed legislation is enacted, the nation's largest states would have an ebony alert system not to be confused with an Amber Alert. Why do we need both? Please listen. All right. State Senator Stephen Bradford, a Democrat, introduced Senate Bill 673 to, quote, address the often ignored or lack of attention given to Black children and young Black women that are missing in California, unquote. A March 23rd statement from Bradford's office said, the measure would authorize law enforcement agencies to request activation of the Ebony Alert if it would help their investigation of a missing Black youth or Black woman ages 12 to 25. The system would also encourage traditional and social media outlets to disseminate information about the missing person. Scores of Black children are excluded from Amber Alerts because they are disproportionately classified as runaways compared to white children.
Mm.
The statement said, citing information from the Black and Missing Foundation, Black children also account for 38% of reported missing children, even though they represent just 14% of the national population. So Black children go missing at higher rates and they are taken seriously less often by the officials. And so this gentleman, Stephen Bradford, is trying to introduce legislation that would create a special alert system for Black people because there is a need there. Now, if you're listening to this show, we count you as an ally. This is kind of the nature and the purpose of the show that we do. So I'm so used to dealing with folks who would try to pick this apart and be like, oh, why do you need something separate? But listen, you understand. I just explained why we need something separate because these folks don't take us seriously. In fact, one of the first shows I did with the Black Information Network was a show about missing while Black. So this gentleman was elected to local office in California and decided to make changes for perhaps a community or district that he represents and to effect change with a problem that exists in that community. And I think that this is the sort of thing, the sort of direct action that we can expect to see when we vote local. This is a positive thing because, again, when what is the number? It's 38% of reported missing children are Black. And now we have somebody that's going to do something about it on the local level because this isn't a federal thing yet. But, you know, a lot of things like this start locally. So any thoughts on this?
Well, you know, it leads me to think about something that just is ingrained in my head. Right. And it's the fact that you may not be able to change the world overnight, but you definitely can change your world overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that first step, right? Like this is that first step to changing the conversation, to utilizing the power of the pen, right? To likely following through on something that was brought up to him while on the campaign trail, or from an experience that he may have directly experienced or from a constituent, and he's working to solve this problem. And so, you know, I tip my hat to Senator Bradford, you know, and I think that I will be very excited to follow this because, like you said, it's just a bill right now, and it's going through the legislature in California. But I'm going to be very excited to follow this, right, to see the conversation, to see the dialogue that comes about it, but also to talk about the precedent that it sets. Because sometimes you work to pass a law, and it may not go anywhere, right? But what it does is it creates conversation that otherwise isn't had.
I think that's
right.
Important.
And that's, and that's, I can't say that that's going to be the most important part of this, but that's going to be a very important part of this process because you just gave me statistics that I didn't know. I didn't know that 38% of missing children in this country were Black children. I knew it was a high percentage, but you're telling me one out of every three children that go missing are Black?
More
than that, right? Like that is absolutely, wholeheartedly, fundamentally ridiculous. And so I it leaves me very excited to see where this, how this progresses.
Sure. So you seem like you got something to...
I mean, I kind of always do, right?
Yeah, go for it.
Mankind's implicit biases make all of these things such a heavy lift for us, right? Because you think something like this would be like universally accepted, but we know better. Like we know for sure that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And the reasons why being things like you said, well, the Black kids probably ran away. The white kids are probably missing and we should probably get to looking for them. But the Black kid probably just ran away and he'll probably be home in a couple of days. Give us a call back. You know what I mean? And it's just the way that we receive all information with regards to the skin that looks like ours, the lens that we see it through, even decent, well-meaning people, right? Even those who are not overtly racist and who are not making decisions in bad faith. It's just their natural implicit bias to see us through a different lens. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's hard to not hear that in literally every story everything, that we
yeah,
cover.
Everything. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I said earlier, a lot of us have turned that off. It's intellectually beneath us to think that people look at the world that way because we've made so much progress and Barack Obama won. And man, we really got to stop blaming the man for all of our problems. And it's like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that without fail, everything that happens in this country, and not just in this country, but more so here than probably anywhere else in the world, things are viewed through separate lenses when your skin looks like ours, and people are more slow to act when it comes to bringing about change and help and assistance for us. When we talk about mortality rates for Black and even Latino and Hispanic and underrepresented people giving birth, the way that doctors treat them in the hospital is different. And I could go down a slippery slope and name every instance where that's true, but there's too many and we don't have enough time. So the look that you saw on my face was like, expletive. Again,
well, I know
every time
I know why that look is on your face, and some listeners might know, but if you weren't listening to these couple of shows that we talked about, you had a very I don't want to call it traumatic, don't let me define your trauma, but it was an experience that was
don't let Ramses call it traumatic. I'll say it on his behalf. Because unfortunately, I was an audience to an attempted abduction of my child. And all of us fathers, puff my chest out a little bit, feel very heroic when it comes to the idea of someone doing something to our children. Except in this instance, before jumping to action, I froze because my mind could not process that I was watching someone try to take my child out of my car while his mother wasn't paying attention, because of course not. Not that she was actively distracted. She just, of course, doesn't think somebody's going to walk up to the car, open the door with her in it, and try to take my child. But it happened, and I saw it, and I wish I'd responded. No, I don't, because if I would have responded faster, I'd probably not be doing the show right now, because I'd probably be serving time for my actions in the wake of witnessing that. But as I ran back from the entrance to the grocery store back towards my car to stop this man from taking my son, I called the police. And the police showed up and did nothing. They asked very few questions. They gave little to no hope that something would be done in the aftermath, with their instructions being specifically to me, if something like this happens again, let us know. We're not going to launch an investigation. We're not going to go to see if there were security cameras. No. If it happens again, let us know. Outside of that, sorry. Forget that you can describe the people and their car. None of that matters. We're okay. Here's our card. And if you guys deal with something like this again, let us know. I got an Amber Alert a week later. Same car, same description, successful kidnapping.
Now, if it had been your son, knowing what we know now, how difficult it is to have a Black child included in the Amber Alerts, I think that one more time we should salute this gentleman, Stephen Bradford, for seeing a problem and doing something about it on the local level. So shout out to you, State Senator Stephen Bradford.
May I want to jump in really quickly and not move too far past that and bring this back to the theme of this show. The situation, as you just highlighted, is horrific. And I can only imagine the pain that you felt, and you're sharing that moment with us and the listeners. So I tip my hat to you, brother, you know, for opening up and being vulnerable. And that is just, it's just not easy. It's just not easy. So know that we're here with you. We got you. We got your back.
I appreciate that, brother.
Bringing this back, because that is a very good example of the reality that's too far often to Black Americans in this country, Americans of color, and, you know, folks of color in this country, but the Black community. And let me just give you a very tangible example of why your vote and your voice matters in these moments. Because you had a member of law enforcement who is a government official, taxpayers pay that individual's salary. Well, the individual that person reports to ultimately is the chief of police. The chief of police is ultimately reports to the mayor and the city council. And that is a person who dictates the culture of that law enforcement agency, who's able to weed out the quote unquote bad apples or dictate how you respond to a situation. So when you elect a mayor and a city council member that cares about their community, that is of their community, that is from their community, then when those moments come for them to decide who is leading the law enforcement agency, those individuals are going to be who decides whether we're going to appoint someone to be the chief of police that is going to take issues like this serious, or they're going to give you a card and say, call me later. Right. And so when folks say that their voice doesn't matter, when folks say that their vote doesn't matter, that, you know, the 500 votes that may have decided the one election that may have been the deciding vote on who becomes the chief of police, right, makes a difference in every person's life in that community. Yep. But we forget, sorry to cut you off, but we just forget the power, because we are so inundated with everything that happens in life that we forget to zoom out and see how, you know, your position is so powerful in a larger context.
Now, I want to take a moment and talk about this 500 votes thing, because a lot of local elections are decided by margins that thin. And if you got 500 followers on your Facebook, Instagram, you can not only engage yourself, but you can engage people around you. You can get stuff done.
Absolutely.
And you can change how your world moves and how secure you feel in your world. I did an episode, No Justice, No Peace, really explaining what that means. And without justice, you can have no peace. Don't want to stay up at night wondering about what if this goes wrong, what if that goes. A lot of people think it's war versus peace. No, having peace in your own life. So it's something to keep in mind. Now, let's talk about another good thing that happened in the state of Washington. So I'll read from the Olympian. Senate lawmakers voted 27-21 Saturday afternoon for House Bill 1240, which bans the purchase and sale of assault weapons in the state of Washington. The bill was sponsored by Representative Strom Peterson, a Democrat from Edmonds, and was co-sponsored by 25 other Democratic lawmakers in the House at the request of Governor Jay Inslee and Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Quote, young people are taken to the streets and will hold us accountable if we don't do something, said Senator Patty Kerderer, a Democrat from Bellevue. She goes on to say, when we're talking about mass shootings and the killing of people quickly and without warning, we're talking about assault weapons, and that's why we're here today. We're here to say enough is enough. So they're doing what Tennessee couldn't do because they elected the right people in the state of Washington. So shout out to them. And then last but not least, I want to read another couple of neat little things that have happened. And again, these are the direct result of voting in local elections. This one I'll read from Yahoo. In Wisconsin, a liberal judge, Janet Potazewicz, decisively defeated her conservative opponent, Daniel Kelly, and secured a seat on the state Supreme Court in a race widely considered to be the most important election of 2023. Potazewicz's victory will give liberals a majority on the Wisconsin court for the first time in 15 years. This potentially offers them the opportunity to strike down a 19th century law banning nearly all abortions and to redraw congressional maps that have allowed Republicans to dominate the Wisconsin legislature despite their near 50-50 split of voters in the state. And then lastly, I'll read this and we'll get your thoughts, Jeff. In another high-profile race in Chicago, the progressive candidate Brandon Jones beat the conservative Democrat Paul Vallas in
Brandon
the race.
Johnson, that is.
Brandon Johnson, I misspoke. In the race to become mayor of the nation's third largest city, the two victories come 5 months after Democrats overcame a prediction of a red wave in last year's midterms. So I want to get your thoughts on and what it means, the mm-hmm. Wisconsin victory and, of course, the victory of Brandon Johnson in Chicago.
And I think they all come back together, right? Mm-hmm. And we can even incorporate what happened in the great state of Oregon. Well,
okay.
And it showcases when you use your vote and you use your voice, good things happen, mm-hmm. right? In the case with Oregon, right, the lawmakers listened to the needs of their community and the needs of the nation, to ban assault weapons, right? And they took matters into their own hands, right? And they passed policy that was reflective of the communities in which and what they were hearing, what they were saying. In Wisconsin, this is very important because the third branch of government, the judicial system, and you know, different places do things very differently from the federal government. In Wisconsin, at the Supreme Court level, it is an elected position. What this is going to mean moving forward is when the legislature passes an unconstitutional, you know, piece of legislation, they are going to have a voice, right? With the abortion law, like, they are going to have a voice in the process, and it's going to be respective of the community. And with Chicago, I think it goes back to, you know, the most important thing here was that the folks of Chicago utilized and participated in the election, and you saw the outcomes as a result, right? Mm-hmm. The Chicago election was two very different folks on, you know, from very different wings of the ideological spectrum. And the people showed up, the people showed out, and they utilized their vote. And now they have a mayor elect that is going to be supportive of their community.
Hmm. Well, that, as they say, is how that's done. So, yes, vote local. All right. It is time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by Underground Beach Club. From the streets to the beach, for the finest in beachwear, visit undergroundbeachclub.com. Today we're talking about an unlikely friendship of Jesse Owens and a Nazi German athlete, Carl Long. I will be reading from historynet.com. I believe that was what it was. All right, here we go. The sight of the graceful American's soaring victory in the long jump and his Olympic record wins in the 100 and 200 meter dashes and 400 meter relay put the lie to Der Führer's simplistic myths about race, Time noted in 1980. Jesse Owens' triumphant showing in the 1936 Berlin Olympics famously put a stake through the supposed claims of Aryan racial superiority. But despite Owens' record-breaking success both on and off the field, his achievements were not widely lauded by the American public at the time. Quote, Hitler didn't snub me, it was our president, FDR, who snubbed me, unquote. The 23-year-old Owens told a crowd upon his return to the States. He goes on to say, the president didn't even send a telegram. Yet, on August 3rd, 1936, an unlikely friendship began to develop between the German-born track star, Carl Ludwig Luz Long, and Owens. And while myth shrouds the story of whether Long gave Owens crucial advice before his third and final opportunity to qualify for the long jump finals, cameras captured the budding friendship as Long strode over to Owens and embraced him. Quote, it took a lot of courage for him to befriend me in front of Hitler, Owens later said in an interview. You can melt down all the medals and cups I have, and they wouldn't be a plating on the 24-carat friendship I felt for Luz Long at that moment. Hitler must have gone crazy watching us embrace. Unquote. After besting Long and taking home the gold in the long jump, Owens was famously photographed saluting the American flag. Long stood behind him, offering the Nazi salute. I think I might give him a pass on that one because, you know. The two remained friends, keeping in contact as much of the world plunged into war. Long was stationed with the German army in North Africa before being killed in action on July 14, 1943, during the Allied invasion of Sicily. In his last letter to Owens, Long, seemingly aware of his impending fate, wrote, quote, my heart tells me, if I be honest with you, that this is the last letter I shall ever write. If it is so, I ask you something. It is a something so very important to me. It is you go to Germany when this war is done. Someday, find my Carl Kai and tell him about his father. Tell him, Jesse, what times were like when we were not separated by war. I am saying, tell him how things can be between men on this earth, unquote. In 1951, Owens traveled to Germany to meet Long's then 10-year-old son, Kai, fulfilling his promise to indeed tell the young boy how things could be. Owens eventually served as best man at Kai's wedding, and the two families remain in contact to this day.
Wow.
So that's a shorter one. Normally we go a little bit longer, but I do want to read the letter in its entirety because I think it's very powerful. This is kind of one of those things that makes me me. It makes you you. I think it makes all of us who we are, right? The fact that we believe that we can make things better without making them worse for other people. That I don't even think that's a real thing. And we do believe that people who don't look like us are our brothers or our sisters or however they identify. I personally, I'll speak for myself. I don't want to state another man's brief, but I believe that we are all endowed with consciousness from the same creator, whoever you decide that creator to be. Mm. We come from that source. We return to that source. This is my belief. So this story speaks to me. I want to read this letter to you. Starts, I am here, Jesse, where it seems there is only the dry sand and the wet blood. I do not fear so much for myself, my friend Jesse. I fear for my woman who is home and my young son, Carl, who has never really known his father. Ouch. My heart tells me, if I be honest with you, that this is the last letter I shall ever write. If it is so, I ask you something. It is something so very important to me. It is, you go to Germany when the war is done. Someday, find my Carl and tell him about his father. Tell him, Jesse, what times were like when we were not separated by war. I am saying, tell him how things can be between men on this earth. If you do this something for me, this thing that I need the most to know will be done, I do something for you now. I tell you something I know you want to hear, and it is true. That hour in Berlin when I first spoke to you, when you had your knee upon the ground, I knew that you were in prayer. Then, I know not how I know, now I do. I know it is never by chance that we came together. I came to you that hour in 1936 for a purpose more than Der Berliner Olympiad. I think that's German. And you, I believe, will read this letter while it should not be possible to reach you ever for a purpose more even than our friendship. I believe this shall come about because I think now that God will make it come about. This is what I have to tell you, Jesse. I think I might believe in God. And I pray to him that even while it should not be possible for this to reach you ever, these words I write will still be read by you. Your brother, Luz.
Wow.
So, I don't see how we can't act like brothers and sisters when there is a bona fide Nazi. Look past all that crap, befriended this man, and adopted his belief structure, I'll call it, in a moment when I'm sure he was dealing with a great deal of hopelessness.
Yeah.
And that connective tissue between human and human is the tie that binds us all, in my belief. I think there's more that binds us than separates us. And I love today's Way Black History Fact because it speaks to me.
Wow.
I wish so many people did not stand to profit from ensuring that things like that don't happen more, because that's the only reason they don't. There's an overwhelming majority of things that bring us together than that divide us. But those in power and those that profit from that division go out of their way very brilliantly and very successfully to ensure that we remain divided and that we do not unite against them.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing I'll add to that is this is a great example and a great reminder for us to remind ourselves to be good people.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love it. Well, I think that'll do it for us today. So thank you all once again for tuning in to Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
This is the Quiet Storm. Okay, I'm joking. All of a sudden. I am Q Ward. And you guys have once again been listening to Civic Cypher.
I want to thank our special guest, Jevin Hodge, for educating us all, because we're DJs.
Hey, it was a pleasure to be here. I look forward to what's to come.
Yeah, man. We got a lot of amazing things in the works. And you can support us, and it's very easy to do so. Subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Subscribe to our, don't even say anything else. subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's the whole message today, right? Share, like, subscribe, but subscribe to our YouTube channel because we got something really, really exciting coming to YouTube, Civic Cypher on YouTube.
Yep, that's it. And shoot, outside of that, I guess we'll just talk to y'all next week, all right? So. Yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds spit tune from sunlight to moon. Bussing off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander / beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show. Get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines. Wake up, refuse, and resist.
This is Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO on my email. It is often mentioned as one of the most progressive and daring stations that we have in this country. They are not afraid to tell you the truth. So tune in to KBOO Portland and get the real word.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society concert series continuing Saturday, April 15th with the Honey Whiskey Trio. The a cappella group and